So my second question is, how did the Cold War affect the emergence of global political activism, such as the anti-apartheid movement, and how did it also shape the emergence of INGOs?
Yeah, I found this a fascinating question because, like, it's really complicated, I think, actually, the answer, because in some ways, some of these organizations would see themselves as outside the Cold War, right? That they're just kind of humanitarian actors coming in and operating, I mean, they would probably say, because most humanitarian organizations go back to the principles in humanitarian relief, I'm talking about, of neutrality, and impartiality. And then most human rights organizations, make the claim that they're just defending the rights of individuals, from oppression. And so there's an element in that which is apparently outwardly non-political, and or at least attempts to kind of stay out of kind of politics. And yet most, I think it's what you're hinting at actually with your question, most, if you look more deeply and you start to kind of scrape away the surface, in most cases, there is something behind these major disasters or major questions. And in that period from the early 50s to the late 80s, early 90s, it will often have its relationship to the Cold War, right? And you can pick out loads of instances of that. The Biafran conflict that I mentioned earlier on in Nigeria, I mean, both sides are kind of fueled by interference from outside, and that kind of escalates a conflict, which then escalates the problem, the humanitarian problem. Same happens in Ethiopia actually as well, because you have a the Derg regime there, which came to power in 1974, was Marxist. So again, it has this kind of Cold War connotations. And so it's always, I think, the geopolitics is always in the background. And even with something like anti-apartheid, which seems, outwardly that's a South African issue, right? But actually, when you take the lens backwards, you can really see that it is also very heavily a Cold War issue because, in a lot of senses, South Africa is part of the anti-communist campaign in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, and particularly in Southern Africa. That's particularly the case after 1975 when Angola and Mozambique become independent from Portugal. 1974, I think, for Mozambique and 75 for Angola, but you can correct me on that if I'm wrong. But that sense of South Africa, which was attempting itself to try and make sure that it had a kind of a bulwark against the possible links between the ANC and these regimes, which were real. But that kind of, so it's really complicated, because outwardly you might get an expression of anti-apartheid in let's take Britain for example, but actually in practice through their in their kind of strategic or military policy, they were very much kind of probably looking at South Africa and saying, well, actually, if we push South Africa too much, and then and we may open up, and I'm putting words in their mouth, right? This is not what I'm saying, but they would probably have argued that what they were trying to do was to use South Africa as a way of stabilizing the region. So in that sense, and actually the key place, and I drove through it once very quickly and without really noticing that I was there, except that when we drove back through, because we're on our way to the Cape, Simonstown was a really important location for the Cold War effort, because it was this right down the tip of Africa, this kind of naval base, which became an important kind of Cold War strategic unit. So the point I'm trying to make is that there are all these kind of ripple effects. And so again, in Southern Africa, beyond, let's say, anti-apartheid, but like the question of racism was also linked to political movements, and beyond that, so in places like Namibia, it's linked to kind of revolutionary questions, which then can have Cold War questions, which then can have who's supplying who with what weapons and what ideological support or financial support. So I'm not sure whether that kind of answers your question, but I think what happens is once you start to dig just a little bit under the surface, you start to see that a lot of these things are wrapped up in these much bigger kind of questions. And the same goes for lots of other locations, which we could talk about. I mean, the disaster in as in like the brutal, bloody conflicts in Latin America, particularly in places like El Salvador in the 1980s, are fueled by the Cold War. And then the refugees that come from that, Cambodia as well in the 70s, all of these locations, and even the legacy into the 90s in the Balkans, you know, where, you know, you get this kind of legacy of that kind of post-Cold War collapse. You know, you can really see that humanitarianism is heavily affected by, you know, but it, I think it's because no crisis, let's take a humanitarian emergency, generally, it's very rare that there isn't a kind of a human cause to it, right? And once you kind of start to step back from it, in most of the major cases, they will have a, you know, a conflict or some sort of political question behind them. And oftentimes that's a Cold War question.